Hey everyone, welcome back to Purple Row Radio. This edition is for Friday, May the 4th, 2012. My name is Greg Stanwood. I'm a staff writer at purplerow.com. And as always, I'm here along with the managing editor of Purple Row, Andrew Martin. Andrew, what's going on?
It's been a weird day today. I mean, there's a baseball game during the game. Baseball game during the day. And the sky was overcast, like, all day. So, you know, when I left work at, like, 5:30, it looked exactly the same as it did at noon. So the whole day had this kind of weird feel to it. When I got home, I'm like, is it really, like, 5:30, almost 6? Or am I, like, is it, like, 2, and I just can't tell what time it is anymore? Weather does that.
That's why we have clocks.
Well, yeah, okay, I knew what actual time it was, Greg. That's why I was looking at my clock. But, It just had one of those. Never mind. You know what? Now I don't even want to talk about it.
Also joining us is Paul Agnello. The three of us are back together once again. And Paul, are you reading a newspaper?
Am I reading a newspaper?
I heard crinkling from your end of the podcast.
I don't think that was me.
Andrew?
I have no newspapers.
All right. Well, something fishy's going on.
I did have tilapia for dinner.
I don't think that would cause a crinkling sound.
But it is fishy.
Oh. Ha.
I've beaten you at your own game, Greg.
Okay. Well, anyway, Paul, what's going on?
Yeah, I am back from San Diego, and I am ready to podcast.
You went to San Diego?
That's why I was gone last week.
Oh, I could have sworn it was something more interesting.
The hell does that mean?
Burn. You gotta go on like a freaking like kind of vacation, and you're like, whatever. I thought it'd be cool in a vacation.
I got shot last week. There, I was in the ICU. I'm back though, and ready to podcast.
The doctor wasn't ready to let me go, but damn the man, we're talking about Rockies baseball on the internet.
I said, doctor, I have a podcast next week. Take care of me. I don't know.
Greg doesn't. Greg, if what? No, you always mean the opposite of what you say.
Yes, always. I lie 100% of the time.
Well, I believe that's what you said on the... Or was it, if you think I'm making a joke, I'm not, or...
So then you should be telling the truth 100% of the time.
That's what. Yes, I should be, and I would
you
like to think...
You should have said that, okay.
But then, oh, God, I don't know. Andrew wants to talk about baseball, I think.
I did. I don't know what... After getting shot down with my weird gray sky story, and now... Now me and Paul can't even laugh about San Diego. Man.
I did go to a Padres Nationals game though.
Ooh. Did they have some ridiculous promotional race?
Honestly, I was pretty hammered, so I don't really remember a thing. Which means it was a good game.
Hey everyone, I'm here from purpleroad.com.
Yeah.
Thank God I gave him the wrong address.
Oh, you know what? Me and a couple buddies though, you know, they stopped selling beer after the seventh inning, right? Yep. Which is funny, because I absolutely know that, except my time at the game there where I was drunk already and completely, I was like, this is an outrage! And so then me and a couple guys went to, like, the bar that they still will serve alcohol at inside the stadium. Like, it's the only place where you could buy it after the seventh inning. And then we were just talking to a truck driver from Kansas City who was like, saying that his hat was, like, autographed by Zach Greinke, and then pointed to a spot on his hat where there's no autograph. He's on
fire. Well, I swear
fire.
I have a hat with Carlos Gonzalez's autograph. I'm not wearing a hat.
He's been on fire, though. I'm loving it, as we all must be.
You know, out of all the guys on the team, you know, some of them are performing better than others, but Todd Helton and Carlos Gonzalez have been the absolute, like, backbone and heart of this team, this past month here with Helton getting all these clutch hits everywhere. Carlos Gonzalez, you know, never mind just the fact that this week's been a tear, but he's been, you know, Mr. Big Hit as well. Mm-hmm. And just it's been, you know, you're actually sitting like, all right, Carlos Gonzalez is coming to the plate. Y'all watch out. I mean, I poke too much fun at Tulowitzki's popping up because it actually pisses me off pretty severely. But, you know, when he comes around, it's going to be a thing to behold, as it always is. But right now, Cargo is giving this team the spark it needs. It needs that guy who's unstoppable, and that's Cargo right now.
I mean, you know, earlier in the month, it was kind of Kadire, in a way, who was the one that was on fire, although I guess it wasn't as quite, you know, impressive as this. I guess it's just about home runs at this point. But yeah, so now they've kind of, like, he passed the torch to Cargo, which is nice.
How Michael Kadir is that, though? He's, you know, career 270-something hitter and, you know, never hit 30 bombs, not a base stealer, never really hit 300 in the season, maybe like once. And then his super hot streak for us, like, yeah, he hit some doubles and it was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't super good, but it was pretty good. And that's Kadir's hot streak.
Yeah.
Very like, hey, attaboy, Kadir.
It was good comparatively.
Also, Tula's only popping up in the infield 4% of the time. Look for that to regress upward.
Wait. There's no way he's only popping up 4% of the time.
Infield?
Well, okay, fair enough. If it's an infield fly ball, I'm just thinking there's pop-ups that are to the outfield as well that are just so blatantly pop-ups that...
I mean, I'm as surprised as you are here.
Is that defined as, like, the range of the infield or as infielded by an infielder? Because you can pop up to the outfield to an infielder, and that probably happens quite frequently.
I wonder how they keep track of that.
I'd hope they define it by the infield, although, honestly, there's actually not really an appreciable difference, right? So,
well, you think about it. They just track the number of fly balls hit to infielders. It's almost guaranteed to be a pop fly then. Because, I mean, yeah, it's a fly ball that's not caught by an infielder. Yeah, there's some of those in the gray areas, but, you know, for the most part after that, it's a fly ball to the outfield.
Does a line drive not count as a fly ball?
No.
Well, no, it's hit on a line.
Yeah, but it's in the air and does not touch the ground.
It's different.
I think it has more to do with, like, the angle of the swing of the bat and the way the ball comes off the bat there, because if it has a distinct, you know, upward lift, it's more likely a fly ball, whereas the... line drive tends to be more on the plane of the swing.
Oh, a line drive is just like a fly ball, but a lot angrier.
I obviously understand the difference between the two. I mean, categorically, like, does a line drive count as a fly ball? Like, there's fly balls and ground balls. When you look at the fly balls and ground balls that are batter hits, is line drives in fly balls, or is it just not there at all?
No, it shouldn't be. And the three should add up to 100.
Yeah.
Right? Otherwise, you'd be at 100 plus whatever the line drive number is.
I can't say I'd look super close at, like, fan graphs for these things, but when you look at a generic stat page, fly balls and ground balls. They don't have a line drive counter.
Well, it's usually fly outs and ground outs.
Okay, yeah. That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, that's different. Yeah.
If you hit a line drive straight at the third baseman, as happened, like, 40 times today, does that count as a fly out?
Yeah, as long as you could line out or out, but it's still an air out.
Yes, I know.
On the simple box score, yeah. Usually if you look at, like, game day or whatever, it specifically says lines out, and a lot of people would choose to keep score in that fashion as well by writing line six route, because it's not a pop fly, it's not a ground ball, it's, you know, it's a line drive to shortstop. So, I don't know, I guess it must be an air out because it's not specifically on the ground.
No, it's an error. The only other thing I will say is that infield fly ball is still part of fly ball.
Yeah.
Right, so when you look at fly ball percentage, like on fan graphs, and then you look fly ball, yeah, it's part of it.
I thought they always had the four separate for me. I mean, they do have
They'll decompose it, but when you look at the fly ball overall number, that's including infield and outfield.
Yeah, you think about when you look at the box score on a... it says fly. Whatever. Let's get past this. I'm like getting confused now.
Well,
this is boring.
I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. Why is that? Tulu whiskey pops out too much. Goddammit. That's what we're talking about.
And this is our retrospective view on the Rockies April.
Yeah. Well,
Tulu whiskey flies out too goddamn much.
Throughout the entirety of April, and then so far through this series here at the beginning of May. The Rockies have yet to be part of a sweep. We have won or lost every series 2-1, which I can't imagine is particularly common. I know the Cubs were like this last year, where they, like, didn't leave one game of around 500 for, like, 6 weeks or something crazy like that. But, I mean, I guess that really kind of speaks to this team, that they're kind of not... They're overall not being streaky in either way. They're not losing a lot or winning a lot. And that, of course, added up to a 500 April. First time that we've actually had a 500 April exactly in team history. So I guess, I mean, do you guys feel that the performance that you saw from this team feels sort of just about right to how we've performed in our record so far?
Yeah, absolutely. You've had inconsistent pitching at best, inconsistent, but slightly more consistent batting, but still, we saw our share of no-hitters carried into the whatever inning, which was a little frustrating. But then we also have, you know, the 18-9 games. I mean, it was so all over the map. It seems like there was like a balance of, you know, ridiculously, you know, meagerly run production and the absolute blowouts. Yeah, it all adds up to 500.
Yep.
Paul?
With that. I mean, I think, you know, we've had some like kind of like timely hitting. So I think that that's kind of helped mask, you know, we've had our pitching has been kind of a mess. And we had some defensive problems early on. I think those are kind of like ironing themselves out slowly. And our hitting, you know, hitting is never perfect. So I think we've been able to kind of, you know, compensate with some clutch hitting while the rest of the team kind of assembles itself. So I think, yeah, it's resulted in the 500 record, and I'm happy with that.
Well, the reason I brought that up is because it seems like, I mean, I already have my opinion on this, that this is just sort of the exaggeratory perspective of the fan. But I think a lot of people would argue that it feels like we actually have a better record than we should.
Probably.
Well, it's been a lot of dramatics as of late, so it does feel like we've been fighting harder and stuff like that. But when you, I mean, I guess we've already forgotten the first like week of the season where we, you know, lost a series to the Astros and looked kind of like crap and
had a terrible home opener.
God awful home opener. I've been to both of Yoelis Chacin's stinkers. Would you believe that? Good night. His home stinkers. Both of the Yoelis Chacin starts I've been to have been stinkers.
It's terrible.
Well, you won't have to worry about that for a while.
Yeah, seriously. Should we move on to the next topic then, Greg?
Sure. I was trying to lead it in that direction.
I'm sure you were.
Yeah. No, you're going to make me say Yoelis Chacin got optioned?
Oh, sure. Yeah, he got optioned. I didn't realize you were wanting me to.
He got optioned.
He is down in the trip list of A's.
Uh-huh. We just learned this after today's game, today being Wednesday, not Friday. I remember back to 3 or 4 weeks ago when we sort of had the first of several discussions about what was going to happen when De La Rosa came back. And, you know, I was curious, whether or not Chacin was going to wind up, being on the receiving end of that demotion. And it turns out that not only was Chacin in consideration, he didn't even make it far enough for that to be the reason. I mean, we obviously saw last night Jim Tracy was really not pleased with Chacin's start there. So, I guess thoughts on whether or not you think this was an appropriate move at this point.
This is absolutely an appropriate move. The bullpen is doing fine right now. Despite we had some blowups on Wednesday, there's always blowups. They're bound to happen, but the bullpen has been downright solid. There's no real room to put Chacin in the bullpen, and we don't want him in the bullpen right now. We want him to figure out what the crap he's doing starting.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is part of what the Rockies missed with Franklin Morales, because the Morales, it's like, oh, he's a starter with control problems. To the bullpen with you! It's like, oh, now they're even more magnified and they're worse. Oh, maybe we shouldn't have done that. And it seems like they took that to heart with Chacin. We're not going to make that mistake twice, and he's going to go be a starter for the Sky Sox for a little while.
Which is a much better option now that we have a humidor.
Mm.
There was a comment in today's Rock Pile. It was either the Rock Pile or the Game Thread where, somebody had missed that there was a humidor in Colorado Springs and all this discussion, in the Rock Pile, which was themed around a possible demotion of Chacin was, why would we send him to AAA unless there's a humidor? Thankfully, and we've already kind of touched on this a couple weeks ago, that the entire role of our AAA team is going to be different now, and hopefully it's going to have a chance to redeem itself a little bit and actually serve a purpose and maybe giving some rehabilitation to these cases like Chacin, where we need to feel better about sending somebody down for what's hopefully a shorter amount of time. I mean, I guess we don't know for sure exactly how long he's going to be down, but I can't imagine that they want him to idle down there for much more than a month, 2 months, and so forth. So
now he can't, if he's not making these dramatic steps that he needs to make, he's, you know, in danger of going the way of, you know, the rest of the disappointments from, you know, last season. And I hate to say this because there's absolutely nothing to quantify this with, But for some reason, I did see Chassin kind of in that group of look at all that upside, and that's the end of it already.
He also has that dark cloud over his head in the sense that he was called out for being, like, out of shape, or, like, he was out of, you know, Dan O'Dowd couldn't reach him or whatever. So, like, you know, there's a potential to kind of spin this, you know, I think, out of control, where it's like, oh, look what happened over the offseason, and now he does this, and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, he's off to a rough start.
I still don't know what to read into that. I mean, I don't think we should.
But,
yeah, 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 that whole mess was ridiculous. Go ahead, Andrew.
No, I was just going to say that the mess was ridiculous, and the way it was handled was poor, and, you know, no high fives for anybody in that regard. But it's one of those smoke and fire kind of things, because it just seems to be a very poor connection that he gets called out for not being ready to go, not being in shape, et cetera, and then having this crap start to the season.
Mm-hmm.
It's I'm not literally going to say that I do think he was out of shape or whatever. I don't know. And when I looked at him at FanFest, I mean, it was, you know, from across the room as he was on the stage of the panel. But he didn't look any different than I'd ever seen him before. But it's not like I hang out with Yoelis Chassin either. So, I don't know, I'm back and forth on it purely because of the fact that we just don't know all the inner workings there. We're not Chassin's trainers, and now he's pitching terribly.
I think I brought this up when we first had this discussion way back in our when we were still going through spring training. But to me, this always reminds me of that whole Manny Corpus thing, where there was so much inconsistency about the story about, like, somebody offhand reported that he was that he had, like, done something ridiculous, like gained 10 pounds or something, and then everybody ran with it, and it turned out to be completely false. But I don't think anybody ever really realized it. There's just dealing with those behind the scenes things and how terrible the media is at reporting them just really frustrates me more than it probably should. So, I definitely hate trying to apply that sort of, premature, really unknown truth to a situation like this.
Agreed.
Thanks.
I had nothing to add. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, again, 500 April, Carlos Gonzalez doing well. We saw Jordan Pacheco demoted. We already talked about that a little bit a couple weeks back. Any other particular notes about where the team has come over the past month?
So one of the things I mentioned, you know, prior to this podcast when we were just kind of figuring out what to talk about is that, you know, for better or worse, the team has been really exciting to watch. Right. And so, like, last year, as I remember it, which is probably in unfairly negative terms, I think, as we all do, but last year the team seemed to have no fight in them in a way. So, like, we've seen this series now with the Dodgers, which the one game we lost was still, you know, pretty exciting. And then we saw the series with the Mets where they had that whole crazy back and forth where we unfortunately lost. We're seeing a lot of late inning scoring. And the games, you know, whether we win or lose, they've just been great to watch, which is completely in contrast to last year. So, you know, I'm enjoying it, and I hope it continues.
Yeah, the Rockies are really low on the list in terms of falling behind early. I think we're probably near the top of giving up early runs to opponents. But we also learned on today's radio broadcast that the Rockies actually are leading Major League Baseball in runs scored in the final third of the game.
That's awesome.
So that, yeah, I mean, that kind of shows you that we, even in situations where the Rockies are, say, facing a tough starter, and everybody sure does know that the Rockies sure face a lot of tough starters, or at least judging by their performance, you'd think so. That kind of goes back to Andrew's theory that the Rockies seem to really have a lot of trouble getting into the game early on against starters who seem to no-hit us for X amount of innings. But ultimately, the team eventually wakes up and doesn't just sort of lay down and stay down. They actually have some life in them late in the game, which is, I mean, obviously you want to be in a position of control from the start and have that agency in the game rather than having to, you know, wait until late in the game to deal with that. But ultimately, having the ability to score late in the game is a beneficial skill that we definitely, I would agree, didn't see much of last season.
No way. They'd score three runs in like the first or second inning, and then we just watched the rest of the game where the other team was just chipping away, and we'd lose.
Mm-hmm. Right. It would start off like 3-2, and then it would be 5-2, 7-2, and then 9-2, and then the game would be over.
Yeah, pretty much.
Those awful strikeouts too. It seems so ridiculous to say because you know we're still striking out, but I guess it's the perpetual caught looking on the outside corner strikeouts that we're not seeing nearly as many of this season. Like a strikeout, sure, it's frustrating when a guy at least is hacking at something. You're like, oh, he missed it. As opposed to really, you're just gonna stand there and take that. All right then, good thing you're on this team. Great, fine, wonderful. It feels a lot better to know that at least if. Feel like the guys are all doing their best to slap the ball somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't recall. I mean, everybody on the team, even the people who are doing a little bit poorly, are contributing in some sense, at least on occasion. There aren't any situations where we're seeing, you know, oh, there's always just that one guy who's just not doing anything. There's somebody is giving value at least some point all the time, and that's certainly not to say that there's not room for improvement in certain areas, but I feel like Chacin hasn't had any great starts, but like there were games where he looked less bad than he was really pitching. And so, I mean, just even that as an example, there have been no complete duds this year.
You're hitting it out of the park, Greg.
Thank you. Everything I say is the opposite.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. That's right. Plus, Andrew's convinced I'm a contrarian.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I am convinced you're a contrarian. Every time we say, like, oh, we like Fang, you're like, no, I don't like that. That's not exciting. Get him, boy. It was him. Get him, boys.
He don't like that.
No, and are not as exciting. No, he's not. He's in double A, and I'm sick of hearing about it.
I used to like it until you did.
Maybe that's what it
is. I liked him first, but yeah. Now he's popular. He's not cool anymore.
You're a baseball hipster, damn it. Whatever, I'm more into Sam Mende. Yeah, no one's following.
Is he gonna become
right
a big
now.
Fan of Ulysse now that he's like, now he's off the radar.
Ulysse, oh, I'm a big fan of Ulysse. I always liked that
the
guy.
Best.
He'll be your new Josh Reneke. I like Josh Reneke before all of you like Josh Reneke.
Well, I guess that's true, but I don't think anybody really likes Josh Reneke.
I like Josh Reneke. He's been awesome. By awesome, I mean okay.
I definitely will say I liked Esmil Rogers before everybody, but I don't think that applies to Reneke.
But now that everyone likes him, with you striking everyone out, you're...
The only thing about Reneke that is even suggesting that sort of idea to me is I just was defending him because everybody forgot he was on the team this offseason. And people were like, I'm going to make a 25-man roster. And then like 12 people made them and none of them included Reneke. And I'm like, we have Josh Reneke. And they're like, oh, I honestly forgot he ever pitched for the Rockies. And I'm like, faith palm.
Yo, speaking of like rosters, question for you both. Who takes Chacin's place in the rotation?
Alex White.
Jeremy Guthrie, when he's activated.
Well, sure, fine. Then, like,
is that what, assuming that Moscoso is still in it, I guess?
Well, here's what they can do. If they recall Friedrich, he'll be able to pitch Friday instead of Moscoso and move Moscoso to the pen. Or what they could do is recall somebody like Alex White, let Moscoso start Friday, put Alex White in when he's ready, which would be like 2 or 3 days later, and then either option Moscoso back when Guthrie is activated or option White back when Guthrie is activated. So, I mean, there's quite a few different things they could do. Or they could just recall somebody for the bullpen and then worry about the rotation when we need to, because, I mean, with the off day tomorrow, we could, in theory, go most of the week with just the people we have on the team already.
Oh, yeah. Man, if Friedrich makes his debut on Friday, I'm so going. That will be awesome, to say the least.
Yeah, it would be cool, I guess.
Well, then the White's first start as a Rocky, Drew Pomerantz's first start as a Rocky. It's an A new face, a new pitcher. Why is that not exciting for you?
Well, it's, I was just totally just playing off what we were talking about, that I'm a contrarian. No, it's exciting.
You like DeMarney the prospect. Now that he's a player, you're not interested in him.
Well, I did defend Friedrich when we were doing the perps voting, but, no, I'm absolutely rooting for Friedrich to succeed, because I think that if he did, it would be a huge sort of, vindication for all those years of bad drafts. Bad first round pitchers that didn't work out. That might end up falling to Matzik, or it might end up hopefully falling to Tyler Anderson. But.
He's the first one, right? He's the first, yeah, because he was right after Weathers, so he's like the guy.
He's the first one who hasn't fallen off the map yet, and I mean, yeah. Feel like a lot of people thought he'd fallen off the map after two down years at Tulsa, but right now, the hamstring injury certainly didn't help anything, but he has looked nice at AAA, and yeah, if he ends up taking the spot in the rotation, I think he's deserved it, and I am very much excited for that. Although, again, whoever ends up there, I don't know how long they're going to last. It's going to be sort of a competition between them or Moscoso for who gets sent back down when Guthrie's ready.
As a final thought on Friedrich there, he's sporting a 2.59 ERA in AAA Colorado Springs with a 2.50 FIP. That's is a 2-1 record and 24 and an out specifically. So he's averaging just above 6 innings a start, which is also very good.
One thing I was considering, and I don't think they're going to do this because they said that they were going to have him start back-to-back games starting tomorrow. But I thought maybe they'd activate Josh Outman as well. That was a possibility.
Well, yeah. Outman would make sense then, but then do you take someone out of the bullpen? Because Outman's been,
well,
you know.
Again, in theory, they don't need to do that immediately because we have a set rotation through the next 6 days. And until that actually adds up right until Guthrie can be activated. I guess in theory they could keep that decision, if they put Outman in the bullpen, they could just have an 8-man bullpen until Guthrie's activated and then decide who to send back down.
Which wouldn't be the worst idea either, just when you consider we haven't been getting the best length out of Moyer, Pomerantz, well, he did pitch, you know, very effectively into a, you know, deep enough into the game.
Yeah, and I think today was actually, I haven't looked to confirm, but it has to be up there in the longest professional outings he's ever had.
Oh, it is, it was the longest.
Because, I always keep bringing up his professional career is so short. A lot of people don't realize that, somebody should go look up how many total games he's played in, because it's gotta be super small. You know, I'm gonna do that right now, so you guys should.
No, I'm doing it right now.
I'm also doing it right now.
We're doing it right now.
That was faster. Go, go.
I was already on Fangraph, so. Okay.
I think it's 28. I don't know. It's my
go! Count. Load, you 28? Bastard.
It's 28 total.
There we go.
It is, yes. 7 major league starts and 21 minor league starts. And that's over just the 2 professional seasons, because again, he didn't pitch the year he was drafted. So 2011 was his first pro season, and he sat, you know, a month of it out waiting to be traded, and then another 3 weeks out recovering from appendicitis. So it really does put a different perspective on just exactly how important it is to watch his development into somebody who really can be stretched out, that to be able to hopefully go 7 innings regularly, or 6 2/3, I guess, is what he pitched today. Definitely something to watch there.
Yeah, so having, like, the point of talking about Pomerantz's outing length there was just the fact that having another man in the bullpen actually would make an awful lot of sense, despite how much I want to see Alex White up again. It's, we've been complaining about how the bullpen needs rest, and we need the starters to go deeper, so having Outman there to take a lot of the load the first, you know, week or so there will be very handy.
I don't think there are too many other options for who they could activate. I mean, I don't think they're going to do anything with Chatwood. He started today, and was still only stretched out to be able to go 55 pitches. So he's a long way off from being ready. Unless, wouldn't it be silly if they like called him up to be in the bullpen again? And
he'd be moralized. He'd be terrible.
That would be pretty awful. Let's not break the one guy who has like a surefire career as a back end starter.
Why is he so surefire over, say, White or something like that?
I guess just because we never really heard about his potential in the – I mean, his stuff isn't that great. He's more of one of those grind-through 6 or 7 innings, no matter how ugly they look, kind of pitchers. And with White, White's got some really nasty stuff, and scouts are saying this guy's either going to be a mid-rotation starter or he's going to be a closer. And they said the same thing about Bettis as well. So I guess I see them more as, like, dominant bullpen potential. And
gotcha.
Chatwood seems like he'd be more in that, like, middle range. You're either, like, one end of the spectrum is an ace starter. The other end of the spectrum is the closer bullpen ace guy. And then right in the middle is kind of like where Tyler Chatwood is. He'd either be your back-end starter or your swing man.
Right. I guess for me it's just with Chatwood. It still seems silly to me to project him at this point because he's so young. I mean, it's silly to think about, but Chatwood is like 15 days separated from being born in the 90s, which
wow,
to me is just crazy. I mean, he's 3 years younger than me, and he's already pitched almost a full season in the majors. So, I guess for me, it still seems like because we don't see too many players up this early. Chacin made his debut around this age, but he wasn't really in a full-time role until a year later. It just seems crazy because we don't see too many players this young really settling in anywhere yet because basically to me, he still seems more like a project than an actual projectable guy.
I mean,
basically, I have no idea where he'll end up at all.
I mean, I agree as he currently is, like if we took a snapshot of him right now, like he's not much, but I do think he's really raw and he was rushed. And so there's kind of, you know, some more upward room for projection that, you know, we've kind of all lost track of. So hopefully he could like, you know, refine pitches, maybe learn a new one, something like that.
Exactly. I feel like 2 years from now, if we don't end up having him regularly in our rotation and we have enough options where that wouldn't be necessary, or, I mean, in theory, if other players work out better and we can carry a rotation forward, Tyler Chatwood could still be in this position for a couple more years, and by the time those couple more years pass by, he could be a totally different pitcher. He could have changed his repertoire and had certain things succeed, other things fail, and just completely change sort of what exactly we're looking forward to in Tyler Chatwood. Whereas I feel like everybody else is probably a little bit closer to what we can expect now.
No, I guess, you know, my point with Rex Brothers was the fact that he started the season as the eighth inning guy and, you know, didn't seem to be that ready for it. But rather than just becoming like the seventh inning guy or the sixth inning guy or whatever, he is suddenly the lefty specialist. And I do strongly feel this is an absolutely ridiculous way to handle him. Oh, you're having trouble getting through three batters, you know, full inning. Huh, okay. Let's give you a really hard lefty. Yes, playing platoons in an Ethier's case, yeah, that works fine. But so far, Rex has not been very effective against left-handers. Maybe we should just wait. I mean, use him. I guess when I think of a guy getting demoted in the bullpen, it just kind of the leverage of situations that he pitches in becomes a lot lower.
You know, and this is – I didn't really talk about it, but I always kind of have this stance that everyone should just kind of exercise patience and, like, let people just play, which is why I was going to say earlier I probably would have still kept Chacin up, although it's certainly justifiable. But so to your point about Rex Brothers, I probably just, you know, he's really young. He's had 40 major league innings. He's striking out 13/9. Like, just leave him alone for now without trying to tinker and move him around into specialist roles or into certain innings. Just, you know, just use him like the power arm that he is and give him the experience.
Well, that's why I hate when you and I don't just I hate it about Jim Tracy, but I hate it about a lot of managers. It's a manager thing. I mean, yes, you have to win your playing time, but I always feel like when you have a high ceiling and you get benched for whatever reason, that, like, eventually you start to learn to play like a bench player and you kind of forget how to be a starter for a little while there. So I guess I'm kind of thinking I would hate for Brothers to get like squeezed into this specialist role when he's got such a better bullpen potential that he mm-hmm. starts eventually having the mentality of just being a specialist rather than I have to mow down lefties and righties wanting to be adjusting and what pitches I'm throwing, etc.
I mean, he's been nasty this year, but his BABIP is close to 500. I'm looking on Fangraphs. I don't know when this was last updated, but
he has been giving up a lot of those obnoxious poked singles from, you know, yeah, say a Hairston or whoever.
Yeah, so his BABIP was, it's 480. Right. And after today, it's actually over 500. So there you go. Today, Wednesday, it's 520, basically. His left on base percentage total is 66-67, which is a bit low.
I feel like it's too early to look at those kind of indicators yet. I mean, it's a good way to just to get a kind of a short-term look at what's going on, but whether or not those actually mean, oh, he's okay, he's just unlucky, it seems like we do need a larger sample on that kind of discussion point. But, I mean,
that's the point, though, right? So it's too early to say whether he's unlucky or not, so by that same logic, it's too early to start kind of screwing around with him and moving him up and down, you know? Nine innings. Big deal.
I don't mind taking him out of the setup role. That's totally fine. Belial has more experience in the higher leverage situations anyhow. So it makes perfect sense for me. And Rogers is even starting to fit into that more shutdown guy role. And I like that because I feel like it does give Rex, like I was saying earlier about the bench player mentality, I guess if you start with a higher role, you're going to have a better mentality about it.
Yeah.
And I feel like you'd appreciate that with your psychology and all.
It's goal setting. You gotta set your goals high and then work your way up to them. That's what it is.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm sure Rex still has that as his goal. I'm just hoping that, you know, Jim Tracy has a way of falling into ruts like that. He just gets so used to using a pitcher for whatever reason, even when it's blatantly not a good idea. He just kind of forgets what life was like before he made that bad decision.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, going back to like psychology stuff too, you're going to lose credibility with your followers if you're just kind of like, you're saying one thing, but then like what you're doing is you're kind of like overreacting to small samples and you're keeping people in roles which they shouldn't necessarily be, and other people pick up on that. That's how you could lose a clubhouse. Not to say that that's what's going to happen, but, you know.
It's a danger. I mean, handling bullpens is always an incredibly confusing thing for a lot of managers. I mean, we like to laugh and complain about how, you know, teams like the Rangers almost exclusively, their use of Neftali Felipe, and just warming him up and then not using him at all when the team really needed him out there to get those critical three outs.
Yeah.
Like it happened last year too during the playoffs. I'm pretty sure it was. Was it last year or the year before?
Well, I have no idea.
It could be the same situation either way though. Feliz was, you know, the Texas bullpen was falling apart, letting a lot of base runners on, you're about to lose a big lead there, and they ended up either losing the lead or giving up almost all of it until I think it was so this must have been 2 years ago then. I think it was Derek Holland came out of the pen and got some outs, and you know, everyone was pleased with the damage had been done when they really should have brought in Feliz to, you know, turn on the fire hose and put all the flames out. So the concept of roles I do feel screws up. I mean, sorry about this. I guess it's been done this way for so long that the players know what the deal is too, and so then they start. It's like Stockholm syndrome, I guess, just in a much less graphic or heavy way. You know, they've been conformed to these roles for so long. It's like, no, I'm the seventh inning guy, or I'm the lefty specialist, or you know, whatever. They adopt that role more.
Yeah.
When it really should just be every pitcher is available everywhere all the time, and the manager needs to know when his biggest moments are. Then again, there is something to be said for the ninth inning mentality as well.
Just one quick update before we wrap this up. Jorge De La Rosa did pitch his first rehab assignment. Modesto Nuts, he went three innings, allowed two hits, one walk, no runs, four strikeouts.
Boom.
Good.
Yep. So, I mean, obviously it's not indicative of anything except he's actually ready to throw, but certainly.
He should obviously be mowing down California League hitters, but the fact that he is doing it is just like, all right, he's where he should be.
And nothing really crazy happened. Like, he walked 12 people or something.
Yeah, he got some ground balls. He got, three to two ground ball flyout.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's good.
Who came on? Did they fuse a full bullpen relief corps? Or did they like bring one guy in for like five innings?
Well, it's only in the third or fourth inning right now.
Yeah,
Nick Schnapeman.
His outing, Nick Saban's pitching? His outing literally just ended. They just put in Schneidman, so.
Okay, my mistake. Anyhow, did you catch any of our amazing discussion about bullpen usage, Greg?
Yes, I was listening to basically the whole thing. I just had somebody calling me to give me food, and I was like, sorry guys, I can't come downstairs right now.
As soon as you left, we decided we're just gonna switch over to a Texas Rangers discussion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
They're more interesting.
I guess my point is I would like to see, finally, Rex Brothers being used to continue pitching innings and then just ramping them up as he gets his groove back. This whole putting him in the lefty specialist role, I do feel that is a role that should be reserved for guys like Arthur Rhodes, like Ray King, who was it that was with the Cards last year? Because they had one of the two prolific Darren Oliver.
I had Darren.
I might have them teams.
It's no, Arthur Rhodes and Darren Oliver.
And of course, the Cardinals had Randy Flores for quite some time as well that.
Was Eddie Guardado a lefty too or no?
I thought Guardado was. Yeah. Didn't he used to close for the Reds?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was a lefty.
I'm gonna check that out.
You should check that out because I think we're both right.
We're right. Yes, there was lefty. Yeah.
The crowd goes wild. Paul and Andrew got one right.
Everyday Eddie.
He hates us.
I got to check on my pasta sauce, all right? Let's wrap this up.
All right.
Good show, everyone. Good show.
You're free to run off if you have to, like Andrew did that other time.
All right. I got sauce waiting for me. I'll see you guys around.
So long.
He got sauce waiting for him.
All right. Well, on that note, we will be back in 1 week on May the 11th. Until then. Take care.